play Clint. Sometimes my daughter tunes in.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to say.
Awesome. What's up, what's up? Welcome to another episode of All Over VoiceOver with Kit VH. I'm your host, Kit VH, and welcome welcome back to the show. In me. That is not true. With me. With me in studio, the lovely, the talented Candy Milo.
Woo!
I am so happy to have you in the studio today.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here, man. I love this.
I met you, like, I think once before. We were over at CESD and we did an audition together
for a
commercial or something. And we were in the booth with, I think, Steve Hamill for maybe a minute and a half.
Yes.
And it might have been the most fun I've ever had in a booth. You just were, it was just so fun. Your energy is great and you're.
Thank you.
That's
like a really cool shout out.
Awesome.
I have a lot of fun because otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
Like we could go get law degrees and be miserable.
That's exactly
and just like
right.
go with tight suits and weird dresses. And why would we do that?
Why would we do that?
We just don't. Let's just be loud, fast, and funny.
How did you discover that you were loud, fast, and funny?
Well, my dad, if he were alive, he'd be 100. I have much older brothers and sisters. He was a stand-up and a vaudevillian kind of a guy. He did singing and stand-up with the USO, with Bob Hope.
Oh, wow.
Kind of a 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Okay.
Kind of a child actor. And I did a lot of theater as a kid, and I just never booked the ingenue. I would always have the big belty thing, or they were always putting me in a wig and makeup so that I could be the old lady in everything. Like
were you doing vaudeville as well?
No,
on stage,
but you know,
you,
I will say
doing?
I learned, and I know it sounds so like trite, but I did learn at my dad's knee. I was 3 or 4 and he was playing in Vegas.
Okay.
And he was with the Ames Brothers. And before me, he opened for Louis Armstrong.
Oh my gosh.
And my brother carried his trumpet. My older brother carried his trumpet on stage. And so I've just kind of been in this showbiz family. But by the time I was old enough to do it professionally,
yeah.
my father was so far out of the game and he had gone into the business of helping the mentally challenged and emotionally challenged. We opened California's very first halfway house for the mentally challenged and emotionally challenged. Of course, he forgot to get us a separate house. So for the first couple of years, we lived with everybody.
Yeah.
And it changed me forever,
yeah.
but it didn't scare me, and it did scar me, but it didn't horribly, disfigurely scar me. It
yeah.
it beautifully scarred me to have this worldview, and I knew what I wanted to do with my life because I was given such gifts to not have to go through life trying to remember what bus to come home on.
Yeah.
You know, man, that's something that's very, very deep.
Can I share with you, like, my grandfather was the chaplain at a mental institution for the whole of his career. And growing up in Michigan, this mental institution called Pinerest Christian Hospital.
Oh, my lanta.
So my parents both worked there for their entire careers. My mom ran the switchboard. My first job.
Oh, my God. We just
high-fiving across the table.
Oh,
my first
God.
Job was I worked in the kitchen there and then worked on the units and was a mental health worker.
Yeah.
And then worked all throughout Grand Rapids for a company called Hope Network doing job coaching. So it was integrating folks from a sheltered workshop into working in the private sector.
I just think it's amazing. And I will tell you, you know, when I sometimes hear people say, you know, Goodwill takes a lot of money. Don't bring your donations there. I always say Goodwill for many, 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 many decades trained the mentally impaired to actually work. So they forever and a day get all of my donations. And don't you feel, Kif, that it has scarred you for the better. It's changed
yeah.
your life and your perspective. And I do think that having an ability to do art comes from knowing how lucky and how blessed
yeah.
we are.
That's
like,
right.
You know, that we don't have the challenges that other people do.
Well, you know, I think it also builds your sense of empathy and awareness.
Yes.
and a sense of equality.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, there but for
yes.
some synapse or some protein not emerging at some point during the pregnancy is the difference between me and this person.
And that's it.
And that's it.
And that is it. And so, yeah. And so their ability to process and or remember and or speak and or walk is they are still somebody's kid. They are still somebody's kid. We are. And I think that empathy and being able to put yourself in another's shoes.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds very trite, but hear me out. It's why we can create character.
Yes.
It's why when somebody goes, oh, do you do those voices? And I was like, no, I never mock anybody that lived with me, never.
Yeah.
But I know how to step in, and I've seen a side that that probably nobody but the very few of us have ever seen in life, that we know what it's like. We were privileged to see differently enabled people, and you can create art out of that. You just can.
Absolutely.
I agree.
And it's telling the truth of that story.
It is.
And that's our calling as an actor, you know, is to embody these characters and to tell the truth of the story for the fullness of the experience.
Right. I had a great run. I did a show at the Gary Marshall Theater. I did Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Oh, that's right. This was recently.
We finished it January 1. And I was working with a wonderful cast member named Shamika Ben, who said so eloquently, everybody's story needs to be told. Mm. And I really do believe that on that level, that is what Frances McDormand was saying when she was talking about the inclusion rider, which everybody just thought was women's fists raised in the air. It's like, no, there are so many people to tell their stories, and you can't tell it for them.
Right.
You can. Everybody has to be able to tell their point of view and their story, and or to be represented. And I think that's what that is. And I do. I really think that the pliable and the sense of humor that I have, and things that I don't think are funny, come from my childhood.
That's great. Wow. That's so fascinating.
Wow. Okay, so we have to go have coffee. I'm we have to go have coffee.
Absolutely. We totally do.
We totally do.
There's just so many gifts from that sense of having that bedrock of empathy in your life early on.
Early on and
throughout.
And being taught by parents that are doing the action that you can see.
Yes.
You can watch what they do. And I kid around, and it's a kind of a crass way of saying when somebody asks me for money, I always say, no, I gave it the childhood. Sorry. I gave and gave for 18 years. I gave and gave and gave and gave.
That's right.
But it's really, you know, it's certain things rub me the wrong way. I hear things other people don't hear. Mm. I immediately, and I know you do too, if there is an accident, I immediately run in.
Mm-hmm.
That is what you do when you are a caretaker bee. It's what we do. And, you know, it's crazy, but yeah.
It's so wild. I mean, it manifests itself in different ways. Like the two brothers who are maybe 2 years, there's a pair of twins who are 2 years behind me, and they're both EMTs and volunteer firemen.
Right.
And they work in schools, but it's also like they still carry their beepers for that very reason. And it's put all of us, all five of us, in the service profession. That's been one of the biggest surprises about this career to me. I think when I first started it and people would talk about the way the acting profession is perceived as this sort of place for narcissists to go get their support.
Yes.
And it can be that.
Yes.
But if you come at it, I do feel this sense, and my wife is very much this way, and hearing from you too, I feel like I see this as much more as a service. We're in service of the story. We're in service of the soul. We're in service of voices that don't have a voice.
Right. And we are not, if you could do anything else, wouldn't you? Like, if you were really good, that's how much this business inspires me and still breaks my heart.
Yeah.
But I come back to it because I am meant to do this. I am supposed to do this.
Yeah.
I don't know how to run a cash register. I suppose I could learn. I don't know. I don't fold clothes really well, but I suppose I could learn. I just do this because since I'm four or five, this is what I was supposed to do. And I laugh loud and ugly at things that other people, you know, they giggle and grimace. And I'm like, no, hilarious, hilarious. I'm on the ground. I'm loud. I'm single. And now we know why. Because I just think that this is what we do. And I believe that you and I also are not seeking fame and fortune. And that's the difference between acting. And I believe it was either Judi Dench or Helen Mirren who had said that they were woefully woeful at the people in the States they have such fame and such broad reach, and they are completely untrained and completely without ability to morph and be, and they're just people that are checking their Instagram and they're seeing followers, and that has become sort of like that drives shows and it drives people. I, as we were talking before we went on the air, I do think that pendulum is swinging away.
Yeah.
And I think you will see that people want to see deeper stories. Look at what won.
Yeah.
The Shape of Water. I mean, look at these stories that are being told, and Lady Bird and Three Billboards and You Get Out. Oh, my Lord. That, to me, I won't even get there. I love that movie. That should have won.
Tell me about your from your getting wigs slapped on you and playing old ladies and those things to making the transition into having the agency in your acting career. What was that moment for you?
I had come to Los Angeles very young. I had skipped a couple of grades.
Were you from LA? Where did you go?
No, I grew up in Northern California in San Jose.
Okay.
And I went to school up there, did a lot of San Jose Children's Music Theater.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of a heady place. It was just really rich with a lot of talent. And I got a taste of LA because I auditioned for the first national tour of Annie down here in Los Angeles. But they had come to see us in a show in San Jose at Children's Music Theater and picked like six of us to come down.
The producers for the...
Yes,
for the...
Martin Sharn and Strauss.
Wow.
And we flew down on PSA and the airline with the smile, and like we auditioned at the Presbyterian Church on Franklin and Highland.
Hollywood Press?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember, I'm going to tell you this quick story. I actually do it in my club act, that I was kept. Now, three of us from that audition got in, and they did the first national tour. And I didn't, because I was very dark. And as my father liked to say, you look Italian. Italians don't give up their kids. And I was like, you need to sit away from me and leave me. So my dad, who's like completely jaded, is who brings me, not my mother, who's like, if one door closes and another door doesn't open, go through the window. You're young. It won't be breaking and entering. So I was like, not my mother, my father. So this little girl, and they keep me because I tap.
Ah.
So, and I tapped. I mean, I really tapped. And so this little girl walks in. She was 10, but she looked 5, and she's waving. My dad said, don't wave at her. She's the enemy. And I'm like, oh, you need to sit away from me. So we're all singing, happy birthday to you. And we were going higher and higher. They wanted to see how high you can belt.
Uh-huh.
This little girl walks in, and all of a sudden we hear, it's a hard knock life. And my dad looks at me and goes, you better hope she doesn't tap. Like 3 seconds later, you hear, sack, 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 sack. My dad goes, let's go. Let's go. And I'm like, oh my God. But what made me stay in show business was either Martin Sharnan or Charles Strauss looked out the door. And when he opened the door, my dad, and he said, Candy, my dad goes, you're done. And like he looked at him and he said, you are finished here, but don't give up. Look at how far you made it. Don't let this throw you. And you should be doing this, and your show is coming. And here's my dad walking out. Yeah, 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 yeah. And I just thought, I heard that the whole way home. Your show is coming. So cut to me moving to Los Angeles. Did a bunch of crazy stuff, sang on cruise ships, was always doing stuff with my voice. Uh-huh. And a friend of mine who was in casting, Dori Zuckerman, uh-huh. I was singing at this nightclub, and she brought a guy from William Morris. And all I ever wanted to be was a backup singer, because I thought that was like the coolest job ever. Not too much dancing. Uh-huh. It was all good. Not a lot of exercise. It was something I wanted. And he and she brought an agent from William Morris, and he couldn't sign me, but he helped me. Huh. And then during the AIDS crisis, he passed away, mm-hmm. and I sang at his memorial, and his assistant had become the head of the department that Aaron had been a part of, and she handed me her card and said, we want to take you on. Aaron loved you. Oh, and I thought, oh my gosh. And then I looked at the card and it said voiceover, and I tore it up. And I was like, you think that I just sang like a voiceover? I thought you were going to get me a backup. So I didn't do it in front of her, but I started to cry. I'm like, cartoon voices? I don't want to do voiceover. It's where artists go to die. I don't want to do this. And she looked me up the next day in a phone book and called me and said, we never heard from you. Walked down the street. I called Dori. Dori said you took the card. I was living in a teeny apartment in Beverly Hills. I walked down and took a meeting, and I went into the booth, and honest, my hand to God, Kiv, I booked everything that I auditioned for.
Oh my God.
It was just fast, everything that I had been doing on stage, and I had been studying with LA Connection, and I was singing, and I was doing nightclub work, and I was doing extra work, and I had done a Christmas in Los Angeles with the Rockettes, and I had just done the first national tour of Dreamgirls. But I didn't know what I wanted to be. I was getting up at the Comedy Store doing poignant comedy, making them think. And I remember Mitzi Shore telling them, make them drink. Don't make them think. Make them drink. And I remember the first night I went up, somebody interrupted me and I walked off the stage. I was like, I work too hard for you to like, this is not a duo. Don't like talk to me. And I was probably not for me. And that was it. The rest was history. And I got into animation when Tiny Toons came around, and they gave me, and I still wasn't signed. They didn't sign, William Morris didn't sign me. I was with them for 16 years. They didn't sign me for the first four. And then Tiny Toons came around in like 88 or 89, and I was cast by Steven Spielberg. And when I left, he looked out the door, and I was like, oh my God, I didn't know he was in there. And he said, you should do this. And the last person who told me I should do something was right. So when he said, you should do this, and then I got really into it. And the Tiny Toons, I did the Little Bird Sweetie.
Uh-huh.
And it really opened doors, but I was in a room with 1,000% pros, like Tress MacNeille and Maurice LaMarche and Frank Welker and Don Messick and Cree Summer. And I remember sitting near Frank Welker, and he showed me how to separate my pages and how to move it over silently and how to not let the big wigs in the room throw me.
Huh.
And he said, you're brand new in here. They're going to try to intimidate you, and just keep your nose to the grindstone. He also told me to take the cover page of every script I do so that I knew what the title was.
Huh.
And the show number, so that I could, if I ever didn't get paid, I'd know what show I was on. It was like, it was the greatest thing. And that was it. And then I had a dry run. I did like 3 years, boom, 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 Dink the Dinosaur and Bobby's World. And I was like the new kid. And then it went away. I had tested for Mad TV and Saturday Night Live a couple of times, no luck. Doing my poignant characters.
why were you choosing in your prep for both Saturday Night Live, Mad TV, were you doing your poignant stuff? Did you have a separation between your animations, sort of wild and woolly?
Yeah, I used, and it's interesting because of our background, there is somebody that I did stalk in a lot of shows that on animation that was the teacher from Cow and Chicken, or is this kind of her voice? Sounded like that, Cow Chicken. And she was somebody that lived in our house, and she used to talk, oh, you're going to hell in a handbasket. I'm not taking my meds. And I was like, oh my God. So I kind of did her, and I made her a teacher for Mad for the first season that I lost, but I went all the way down to the end. Wow. I made her a kindergarten teacher 3 days before retirement that went to class drunk. And she was just like, I don't care. Let's paint the walls, everybody. Can you spell Bermuda? And it was really funny, but it wasn't like the crazy rabid football fans. That wasn't the characters they were buying. And then I did a Latina girl, a woman that cleaned at night. And then she kept trying to audition for the producers. So I was trying to get them to go with breaking the fourth wall and have the producers and the writers of Mad TV, and her being the cleaning woman. And she had a hearing aid, which was in the shape of a larger ear, because she thought it wouldn't look good. And she sang. And so she sang parodies. And they were like, what else you got? I was like, okay. Then I have sort of a gum chewing. And I think what they came back with was twofold. I think two brown and two Gilda, which was interesting.
What?
To get two Gilda. Too much of that. You know, everybody else did these bigger, and she did these really whacked out sort of side characters. She didn't do she wasn't one of the guys. Hers were the crazy Emily Latellas. And that's what I did, because back then there was no equal rights. I would have been doing side characters, except Mad was so progressive.
Yes.
That they really wanted you to branch out and do characters where the guys could be second rate.
That's
in it. So it was interesting. And
I
just carried forward things that I was doing in animation that would make people roll in animation. And I, on camera, they couldn't figure out what I was and who I was and what I was representing. And I just kept saying, what does it matter?
What
isn't
does
it a
matter?
Great character? And no, it was very, who are you? And, you know, what's your background? And I was like, not going to answer. I was born in America. I'm American.
Yeah.
If I'm willing to do this and take the heat for it, let me do it.
Yeah.
And so I think it just, and, you know, in hindsight, I was reaching for something that, you know, somebody thought I would be great on. They saw me and they were like, you have to audition for Mad, and that was like a 10-week process.
Oh my
God.
That.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't fathom the length of time that is.
Yeah. You had to go back. You had to work with people, and they were honing so that when you went to test, the writers, Fax and Adam, they had you cold. You knew exactly what you were doing. You knew exactly. Don't ad lib, go in, do the push cart, bring out the beatbox, sing your parody, then go into the next one. And they had it wired for what they wanted. And then ultimately Fox made the final decision. But I would just go, and all of it unpaid.
Yeah, that's right.
You were just trying to get a gig. And I was thinking, you know, I remember when I was devastated that it didn't happen twice, that I had a conversation with my voiceover agents, which were the only agents I had. They were representing me.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, imagine putting that 10 weeks worth of work into your characters for VO and being paid. And that's when I really committed. So it was really like mid-90s that I committed, really committed to voiceover. And it's been a kind of an amazing thing I've been really lucky.
What a fascinating experience, though, to have that, go through that and then go good. Yeah. And then say, this is my place.
Right.
And here I go.
Well, listen, man, don't you see like the interviews from, you know, like the kids who didn't get Annie and they still are dyeing their hair red and they're still talking about how close they got. I think that that's where we get stuck.
Yes.
So was I going to get stuck at Annie? Was I going to get stuck at Mad TV? No, I ended up being such good friends with Fax and Adam that they put me on this animated series and they were like, dude, this is what, and I did all my characters from my audition for their show. The show was called Gary and Mike. It was brilliant. I got to work with Bryan Cranston and Harlan Williams, and it was like this amazing Kerwood Smith. It was amazing. And I went, so if you look for the opportunity rather than being stopped at the no, I think what the no tells you, Kiff, is that it's a save.
Yeah.
The no is like, you don't keep pushing. Don't keep rowing. Lift up your oars and see where life takes you. You gave it a shot. They said no. What did you learn? Oh, that other person that they got rid of before me, that was a good character too. I might have to lift a little of that. And, you know, it's been great. But I have been, I do love voiceover and I love character work. And I think it's really important. You know, yes, with today's like video games and these sort of reality and easier, softer, where you're having more on-camera actors just kind of play themselves. My style is still very Looney Tunes and bigger than life. And but I do believe that I can't change me.
Yeah.
So it'll come back around again because the world is round, man.
Yes, it
all just keeps coming back and it may not be for a while. And dude, I will find something else to do. And then when I'm back in style, I'll be as old as Betty White and it'll be fabulous. And then I'll be like in diapers and somebody will carry me in the room. And I'll just be fine with that. I'll be fine. Sipping water.
Sip some water. That's marvelous.
I think you have to be positive. Why let somebody else's opinion of you dim your light? It doesn't matter, you know, in that moment, you didn't get the job. But if we learn anything from watching actors who are working speak, it's just that we do it for us.
Yes.
And hopefully we can bring you along. And if we didn't bring you along, then we're not right, but we're not wrong. We're just not right.
I keep saying that a lot, that I don't believe this is a town of rejection.
Agreed.
This is a town where you don't necessarily get selected all the time.
Dude.
If there's a bowl of Jolly Ranchers and I select the green apple over the grape, I didn't reject the grape.
Right.
I selected green apple and grape is awesome and I might want grape a little bit later on. But if grape goes, what's wrong with grape? I'm gonna give it up.
And I'm gonna put on another wrapper.
Exactly.
And I'm gonna put in, then I'll be cherry. And it's like,
this cherry tastes like grape,
dude.
And this is not cherry. And what happened to grape? I love grape, but I didn't want grape then because I just done mouthwash.
Yeah. And I think that is really voiceover in a nutshell. When people talk about, all you can talk about is how to create your own character.
Yeah.
All you can teach and show is, what are you about? Who are you from? That's great. That's funny. Nobody's doing that. That's really good. Here's how you project that into a microphone and sell from your heart. But these people who teach and talk about you need to have a this voice and a that voice and that voice, what you are adding incorrectly, I think, to a new voice actor is a layer that no one needs. You do not need a prince or princess voice. You do not need that. Any affectation you put on your voice, anything that you do is your version of a prince or a princess. You will never, why would you imitate someone to do this? Now you can if you're playing somebody old or you get hired and they're like, oh, you sound like somebody, you can do it. But if I decide to do this, I haven't watched a TV show going, oh, that's that, and I'm doing that. No, I just watched Victoria and Abdul, and I'm doing Dame Judi Dench saying, you know, are you lying to me? And I'm like, to me, that's a better thing. I think impressions are okay, but not of living voice actors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Dan Castellaneta's got it, man. Mm-hmm. He's alive. He's got He's got that stuff down.
Yep.
They're all alive. I think that it is purely voiceover is character creation artfully delivered through a microphone in your audition and you standing emotionally and artistically behind it and saying, you know what? This is what I think the voice should sound like. This is it. Years ago, Chris Kavanaugh, who just passed away, created the voice of Dexter from Dexter's Lab, and she quit. She made enough money, she quit. She quit show business, and like the first season in, and I did the last six seasons.
Okay.
And the hardest job I ever did, ever, ever, ever in the 30 plus years I've been doing this, is to recreate Chris Kavanaugh's voice because it was constantly a disappointment. Listen, I can do it. I'm here. I am Baxter from Dexter's Laboratory. But the way she breathed is different from the way I breathe. The way her life circumstances were different. And what the creators were did not want to do, they wanted it to be seamless. And I kept saying, from an artistic point of view, I can't do that. I can do her voice, but I have a completely different sense of humor that I think is just as funny. Yeah. We used to be friends. I get what she can do.
Yeah.
We used to have agents together. We used to be friends and go out on the same calls. And she was talking like this, and it was really, and I could do it, and I sounded just like her. But I can't do the pauses that she's doing because she's having different, she had different thoughts.
And
she
had different choices.
Making different choices in her head. And I said, yes, reward for me was that it opened doors for me to say, oh my God, Candy did a great job. She's reliable. She's in the room. I'm at Cartoon Network. Other auditions were coming through. I'd finish a session. They would give me something to audition. It was great. But I, Tuesday mornings, wanted to kill myself walking into Cartoon Network. I was saying, and they used to have to play a clip from her in my headphones so I could get into the exact same, and because they didn't want the fans to sense a difference. And I thought a smarter thing might have been, and it would have gone forever, were for the creators to let me roll out me. And I never got a chance to do that. But other great things happened from that, and for which I'm eternally grateful. But that was a hard gig.
Yeah.
That was a really hard gig. How to feel invisible in 10 easy steps is to go in and take over an iconic voice, and they don't want you there. They really want her there, and she's not there. And I'm like, I'm here, and I'm human, and I can hear you. I heard that. I can hear you.
Man.
And I'm doing the very best I can. But, you know, really, Gendy was fantastic. That Gendy Tartakovsky, who created it, like, I could explain that to him. But the studio was crazy. They wanted seamless.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, you know, that's not going to just keep. Anyway.
I understand. I totally understand that challenge. I mean, a big chunk of my work is voice matching.
Really?
Yeah.
What is that? I mean, How hard is that, man? Speak about that.
Well, I just did Han Solo for Star Wars: Forces of Destiny.
Oh wow!
And the work was to match Harrison. Let me rephrase that because I'm learning to put this in a place to mitigate exactly what you're describing.
Right.
My task was to play Han Solo as has been established.
Yes.
In The Force Awakens. So I had to figure out exactly where we intersected. And living with being a Star Wars fan from, you know, when my dad took me out of school to go see it, I've been playing Han Solo ever since I was a kid.
Right.
So I knew how to act it, but like that's a unique situation because a lot of the stuff I do is in trailer matching.
Right.
So it'll be like, you know, Tom Hanks in the trailer for Inferno going, "We have to get to Venice." So figuring out how to, you know.
It's so good. And I'm watching you like I'm watching TV because I can't do that for anything.
Really?
Let me tell you who I voice matched. Here's who I voice matched. Do I get Kristen Stewart? No. Angela and Lansbury in Mr. Popper's Penguins. I show up to the Fox lot. I walk in. They say they've got a spot for me. And it says Candy Milo / driver. So I'm like, I walk in and I said, "Hi, I'm here for Mr. Popper's Penguins." And they said, "Oh, is she in the car?" And I went, "Who?" And they said, the voice match. And I was like, "It's me." And this director, this handsome guy walks out, the actual film director. And he's like, "It's you?" And I went, "Mr. Popper, they're not for sale, Mr. Popper." And he was like, "Oh, my God." And I went, "Welcome to my career. I am now 11 again, placing a gray wig, smiling broadly, and putting black in all my creases and white powder on my forehead. That is all I got. I can't. Like somebody said, there was something Julia Roberts did. And you know how it happens, uh-huh. is that in their contracts, all pickups and ADR is free, pending actor availability.
Ah.
Because that's why they make so much money. Well, guess what their agents say? They're never available. So I went in and did, and there was something that I forget Julia Roberts did. And I was with CESD at the time, and uh-huh. I remember Patty, God love her, sending me this going, this is right in your wheelhouse. You actually sound like Julia Roberts. I listened to that thing so many times that you know what I did, Kip? I recorded Julia Roberts doing it. I recorded the clip and uh-huh. sent it in. And Pat was like, Candy? And I said, what? And she was like, is this the clip that we sent you that you put your name on? Candy Milo as whatever the character was. And then sample. I just played the sample and sent it in. And she was like, you can actually hear this before it starts. And I was like, I just, because I report on cheap stuff, but I want you to know that that's, I stink at it, man. And I don't know what it is because I want to act it.
It's fun.
And they want a match, and I don't know. And I just,
I think you could, I do think you can train yourself to do it. But I
do
think,
you really? Should I take your class?
I need to do another class about it. We did a class about it.
Stop
one of my students,
it.
I'm serious. Like I done my intro to VO class, and then my students were all like, "We want more. We want more from you." So I
do it, and I will take your class.
Okay,
but you cannot keep me quiet.
I don't have to keep you. It's not my job to keep you quiet. My job is to get you to sound like Julia Roberts and not send the sample back. But like, so like this one student of mine came into class and was like, I feel great in voiceover, but I can't do what you do, and I want to figure out how to do that. And I was like, great. Well, let's listen to you read. We'll do a piece of. A piece of just kind of neutral copy. I don't know, like a piece of, you know, ad copy for Listerine or whatever. Just not even something with so much sales on it. Just a neutral piece. So we had the whole class listen to it, and we played it back through the speaker as he read. And I was like, okay, everybody, who do you hear? You guys watch TV. You watch movies. Who's a close match?
Smart.
Someone goes, Chris Pine. Chris Pine's not too far. And then so Jai was like, Chris Pine. He's like, I'm of Indian descent. I can't do Chris Pine. I was like, why can't you do Chris Pine? Why don't you work on that?
Right.
So week after week, he'd come in and get closer and closer. And he just spent all this time listening to him. Then one comes into class. He's literally bouncing off the wall. He's just like, I found him. I found my Chris Pine. So then he starts doing it. And the whole classroom goes up for grabs because we can't believe what we're hearing him do.
Right.
And then he's like, okay, now I got to try to get Chris Pratt. So like that's it. It's like just figuring out. I took a workshop with Fraley about this, Barbara Harris, Pat Fraley workshop. And Fraley's point that really stuck with me was like, look, if you're a man, let me see if I can find my Pat Fraley voice. Hi, this is Pat Fraley. There it is.
Yes.
If you're a man and you're in your mid 40s, you can probably get most men in their 40s
right.
at about 80%. The mouth work is what's different. Their phrasing, exactly all the things you were talking about,
right.
about what had been established for Dexter, the same kind of things. And then listening for those breaks, those pauses, and the intention behind it. So like some guys really, really, I cannot for the life of me get Ryan Reynolds.
Oh.
Ryan Reynolds is really hard for me to match, and I don't know why. It's like it should be all there, but a lot of it is like even in there, I can do it for maybe like a moment and then it disappears.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, it's that interesting thing of letting go of the aspect of how you would do it, performance, and then trying to figure out the mouth, because I had a big tell in my talking about Dexter that Chrissy had an accent. Mm. And she talked like that. She had this really slight accent. So before you did Dexter, you had to get in her voice. You had to do this accent. And then you put on Russian on top of it. Because people would say, is it Russian? Is it French? It sounds kind of country. And I was like, Chrissy spoke with an accent. And then Gendy was talking to her. And Gendy is Russian. Gendy, when he talks to you, he sounds like this. It's like talks like that. So she would have her action. Then she would then talk like that. And then we were talking about, and that's where the French came in, because it was actually, and I was like, to do that. But because we're actors and not mimics.
Yeah.
And impressionists, like that's how Frank Welker started.
Yeah.
He was an impressionist. We've talked about this going back to stand-up and comedy and character creation, his gift, the Meskimens, this is that, you know, this mimicry is, and we are mimicking something else because of our backgrounds. And I have to get, I'm with you on that. You have to let go and suspend disbelief and just listen to the breathing, listen to the nasal. And I remember getting really close to Carrie Fisher for The Princess Leia, and I went over it and over it and over it.
I remember playing that in your voice,
and I remember saying, "Captain, was you getting down in there and getting down in there?" And just she had just was older, and she had this, and I, you know, got so close that I was really excited. And I remember when they were doing, I think it was Star Wars Rebel, and they really wanted this Carrie Fisher sound.
Yeah.
And I just remember telling my agents, I don't know what else to do. And they were gave me your Jolly Ranchers thing. It just wasn't you this time. Doesn't mean that you didn't and something else will come along. Yeah. But I, you know, I just think it's, I think it's a big deal also, you know, when I think young people and all people should be watching these movies that are out now. See who's working because they are not going to be able to do their ADR. They just won't. They will because it's free.
Yep.
The only one who does all her own ADR is Demi Moore.
Really?
Because she never wanted anybody to do her voice.
That's great.
Isn't that interesting?
It
she
really
would make
is.
Herself available. But, you know, like when they were talking about pickups and Mark Wahlberg got money and Michelle Williams didn't, I was like, that is really standard. Mark Wahlberg just thought to put it in that he won't come in and do anything because he doesn't want to do it. So if he made it really expensive, you wouldn't do it. Michelle Williams, they tweaked her because they could. And I was saying, normally it would be somebody that could do Michelle Williams. And I think it's for young people and for new people starting out, this voice matching is great. Try to see what movies are out and can you sound like Taraji? Can you sound like Viola? Can you sound like Meryl?
Right.
These are films. Now these actors are all going to work. Can you sound like Laurie Metcalf? Can you sound like, you know, Saoirse Ronan? Can you sound like these people? These are the next generation of people that are going to work and won't do it for free.
And your Sean Connery and your Jack Nicholson and your Cher impressions are great fun at parties.
And on Saturday morning animation.
And on
for a little character in the back.
Yeah.
But not for it, not in reality and not on really not on cartoon shows as main characters. And I think you'd be shocked how many people come in with impressions of Dan Castellaneta and Robin Williams. And
is that because that's the perception? Do you think that people think that this is how you break in is by doing big, crazy voices what do you see
what do you think? What do you hear when kids say, and it's never corrected. So let's go back 10 or 15 years when I would do, you know, like Young Actor Theater Camp or something, or I've always been going to high schools and talking about voiceover. And what did I hear 9 times out of 10? I can do Lilo from Lilo and Stitch. I've always wanted to do cartoon voices. I can do Lilo. I can do, the last time I taught was I can do Rick of Rick and Morty.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay, I don't know why you're watching it at 9, but okay.
Right.
And no one corrects them
and
says, that's great. You know, you can't get a job doing that. But it's great that you're learning how to move your mouth and it's great that you're listening and do it. But who are some of the people? Give me someone from your class that you admire. And who is in your fourth grade class that you love? Can you do your teacher? How about you? Can you do your teacher?
That's
and
so cool.
I think that that's what it is, that kids watch cartoons. They love it so much. If they can make mouth noises, they do these, they imitate.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why for so many years, the first year of Idol, it was really hard for me to watch. I have a really good friend who produces and plays on the show. And it was hard for me to watch because you had baby, because that was the sound.
Right.
And everybody went on trying to sing like Britney. And you're like, I want somebody to come in and bust loose. And that's why your Fantasias wins. And look at Jennifer Hudson killing the game. They just were themselves. They knew they had to be the greatest version of themselves. But, you know, I think that it's not corrected. And then we have this new last generation growing up in social media where everything is simply a reflection of likes. So you do something and 800 people like it. That's what you do. You set yourself on fire and you got a million views.
Yeah.
You are going to set yourself on fire. We have to retrain everybody to use social media only as a platform to reach out, but not as a platform to discover yourself, and especially not discover yourself as an actor.
Wow.
You can't, man. These kids are looking at, you know, people putting boobs on their foreheads in China, and this is like the, or Japan, forgive me, I was trying to think of the girl and I was like, I don't understand this. And eating Tide Pods, and you're like, you can't learn how to act from the internet. You just can't.
The image in my head is that great Bugs Bunny Daffy Duck cartoon where Daffy dresses as a devil and drinks nitroglycerine.
Yes.
And gunpowder.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And
come on, friends, hold on to your boyfriends.
Yes.
And it's that same thing of like Daffy's desire to get Bugs's adoration. He's prepared to explode himself for the sake of getting applause. And it's so funny. It's been following me around since the last time I did a meditation specifically on like, dude, just be yourself. Yourself is enough.
It's truly enough. My daughter is at a restaurant. She's a manager and she was hostessing one night, filling in, and somebody had to wait. And this guy walked up, and the girl's head is in her phone, and he said, we've been waiting. Do you know how many Instagram followers she has? And Gabby was like, my daughter was like, okay, I don't even know what to do with that. But she was like, no, I don't. How many does she have? And I was like, you think you can cut people in line because you have followers? Or are you threatening to jack up the restaurant because you didn't get in on time?
Right.
So that was interesting. I was doing a play and somebody was writing a web series and he was writing a character. I looked over his shoulder and I was like, oh my God, that's really hilarious. Forgive me for looking. Please write in a middle-aged woman that could be in the web series. And he said, ugh, how many followers do you have on Facebook? How many Twitter followers? And I was like, not very many. I'm kind of new at it. And this was many years ago. And he said, you should just buy them because I can't sell you in my show to anybody that wants to buy it unless you have. And I was like, yeah, but if I spend so many hours a day trying to get Twitter followers by, you know, putting, then how, when do I have time to study my acting to go to class tonight? This is weird. Don't you think you should put me in because I'm funny in this festival of one acts, these short 5-minute plays? I just thought it was really weird. And I don't know if he ever sold it, but I couldn't have been less interested on the planet. But yeah, that was literally a thing. But thank goodness that thing was like 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
Because yeah, right.
I think now we're going to have a little blowback. But
I hope so.
I think, you know, I can feel it. I think we're all just so tired that I at one point, and we're all trying to change the channel and we can't. And I think when enough people try to change the channel, things will change. But I think I only have 4,800 Twitter followers. Remember when they had that big purge? I was looking at some bigger names who had lost like 100,000 followers. I lost two. I had two bots following me, two Russian bots. And I was like, okay, I lost two. I was like 4,798. And I was like, oh, man.
I mean, this part of me feels like, you know, I pay attention to it, but it also feels like paying attention to my gas mileage and how I'm driving.
Exactly.
You know, I was like, what's my mileage? Am I getting 23 per gallon or 24?
Right.
And it doesn't help me, like you say, prepare my audition work for tomorrow.
No.
Make sure that I'm delivering what I need to be delivering.
Right.
Doing my rest. Taking care of the things that need to be taken care
of. No, and if you don't think that your system gets jacked from getting on these social media things and you know, we can't help but envy, which is just soul crushing. We can't help but then question, why didn't I go out and did I read? And, oh, they picked her. Why didn't they pick? And then I just am like, I'm just going to put on some cute puppy pictures or I'll just retweet my same political beliefs from someone that's kind of moderate. And that's all I do. And then I go away. And then when they do the follow Friday, I'm like, oh, and they put my name in. I'm like, oh, thanks. And thank you. And that's all I do. And then an hour goes by and I'm like, I just lost an hour of my life.
Right.
I will never get back. And if you want to follow me, it's great. I don't ever post anything groundbreaking. I do cartoon voices and I love it. And I want to keep working just if only to annoy people.
And I think that ultimately is really all of the people that I follow, all I want from them is their authenticity.
Right.
And, you know, and maybe their attention for a second. Like I remember still even growing up, I've had those celebrity hangout dreams is what I've named them. Like I have this dream where I'm hanging out in a Ford Mustang convertible with Bruce Willis for an afternoon.
That's
just driving
so
around.
Weird. I had a dream that Jerry Seinfeld left his wife for me.
That's
and
awesome.
I was like, I don't know why you did that. We've never actually met. But I would date you. I would so go out with you. But you, in my dream, I'm like, you left her for me? I can't. Thank you. That is so nice. And that was my big dream. And then I've had Tom Hanks dreams.
Yeah.
Where we're on a movie set and I'm like watching him.
Yeah.
And all I want to do on the movie set is talk to him about Peter Scolari. Like,
really?
What happened to him? Like, he's done some good stuff, but... You guys didn't bosom all the way buddies? You're just like half buddies, were you three-quarter buddies? And I just, because I do love Peter, that's who I had a crush on. I always thought Tom Hanks was really funny and great.
Yeah.
I had a crush on Peter Scolari, and I thought he was really great. And I was like, it's odd how life turns out. And I have dreams like that. But I did just have the Jerry Seinfeld dream, which is... That is like the oddest thing to admit. What was that about? What did I see him on?
I don't even know if it's a seeing thing. I know with like those guys, it was like guys I admired.
Right.
But like, wouldn't daydream about it.
Right.
It's only the kind of purging thing that happens at night.
Isn't
where
that
suddenly
wild?
It's like, and it's, and sometimes I do think for whatever reason, I do shamanic drum journey from time to time. And my spirit animal has presented itself as a wolf to me.
Right.
So, and that's been a constant for me. I've never talked about it on the show or dove
right
too
on,
deep,
man.
But why not? This is
Come
me.
On, it's
so,
me.
So there you go. It's you. So Candy, a wolf is my spirit animal. But
I
like
love that.
But these dreams will come also, and there'll be things that are given to me in that context. And I do believe that, you know, that, you know, I mean, I'm raised Christian. I converted to Catholicism, but I don't wind the watch too tight.
Right.
I believe that we're spoken to in all kinds of different ways and guided in different ways. And I've always been like, going to church for me is going to the movie theater.
Right.
And I find so many truths in these pictures, you know?
Right.
And so I'm open to receive that kind of information. And I've really found some really helpful stuff in that.
Oh, you know? I am with you. And I think dreams are powerful because I do believe there are messages. I will tell you that if you believe that they're hokey puck and nothing had come of it, I will tell you, I was a big admirer of Robin Williams. And I used to dream about him all the time. Like when I met him, I was going to say this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And I started to look at the messages when I had an opportunity to actually meet him on the street. And we were walking. I was in Beverly Hills. I was Gabby, my daughter who's 26, was just born. And he was perspiring and hairy and he had this weird outfit on. And he was walking toward me and I am pushing the stroller with like an infant. And he stopped and he looked in and I just looked at him and I went, I love you. And he got down on one knee and he went, and I love you too. And I want you to know I didn't say anything. I completely froze. So all these people who were like, I'm not getting any messages, I don't need to do it, I would behave so differently if I met him. I was like, I didn't say anything to him except I barely squeaked out, I love you. I wanted to say, oh my God, I dream about you all the time. You're so amazing. And I grew up near San Francisco. I used to see you when I was a kid. My dad used to bring me. You used to play Finocchio's after you finished. And I said nothing. And I thought, I've got to dream about Robin again so I can tell him what I would have said in my dream so I could talk to him. And it was like the weirdest thing that I thought, why isn't it all communication? Yeah. Somebody wisely told me, and then I heard it said in Harry Potter, is just because it's happening in your head doesn't mean it isn't real.
Yeah.
Because if it's happening to you, it is real.
You're receiving it.
Yeah, and that's your reality. And I know that sounds so esoteric and out there, but if we're looking at ways, Kif, that we find our inspiration for characters, you cannot be narrow-minded and be an actor. You cannot be dogmatic or an ideologue and be a successful actor. You have to be open. You don't have to be all woozy-woozy and like outside, and you don't have to have a particular ideology or view. But I find that if you're open and you're not narrow-minded and you are just a better actor because you know how to listen and you know how to watch for signs and for cues. And if you're a little more rigid and you're only on the and you're only on this plane and you're only doing this thing, how can you see into someone's soul and their eyes and know how to respond? Right. How can you read on the page and know what the writer's really getting at, and how you do that with just your voice in a cartoon? How do you have to be more open and a little more fearless, I believe. A little more fearless, a little more fierce, and a not so judgy, like not so narrow. Because there's no room for that. And I said I could never be in politics. Somebody said, oh, you should do it. Your voice is so fierce. And I'm like, I could never do it because I could never stick to one subject. I'd be like, oh, what a good idea. Well, that's a good idea too. We should do that. And we're like, oh, you're on the other side. Oh, but he's got a good idea. Everything else he said sucks, but that's a good idea. I could never do that.
I can bring enthusiasm and energy and passion to things.
Yes.
But in terms of a leader, I'm too interested in listening and weighing and being and taking on things. And it is that empathy that's important, but also that empathy that can keep me from moving forward with things.
Because there's that overwhelming.
That's right.
And and when people are empathetic and are empaths, you just take so much in, and it's a hard thing to do. When do you put up the fence? And when you're working, it's a whole different, it's why I really think a vocal studio where we record is a sacred space. And it's really hard to have what I call civilians, the non-creatives, the suits in there. I don't dislike any of them, but their job is to get a product in one take or blah, 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 quickly, cheaply, in the realm of standards and practices that fit the toys that they're doing, and it doesn't make for it. Or if you've got a voice director that doesn't understand you artistically or somebody, the studio, the recording area needs to be a sacred space where because comedy isn't pretty.
Right.
It's ugly. Your face gets ugly. You're screaming. You're turning purple. You know, it's that kind of a thing.
You're taking some extreme personal risks, and it and not all of it works.
Right.
And creatives get that. That's the nature of that space. And folks who don't. And you need that. And when that judgy energy comes in there, it really can inhibit. Like when we were writing, creating reviews at Second City or improvising, it's that same space of like, I cannot have you focused on what the show is going to be in 8 weeks.
Right.
While we're creating here.
Right. And I will say I worked with a wonderful woman, Andrea Romano, just because she was so intuitive, having been an actor and a director and a writer and then a voice director. You could look out and she'd go, one more? You have one more? I have an idea. All you had to do was turn your head to the booth and go, like, we would do it and she'd go, she'd look back and then get direction and then direct you. And then I would look at her and she'd go, you got another one? Or give me a series of three, wink. And that vibe, it just makes you relax because she will constantly remind you back in the days when it was tape, that it's just tape and tape is cheap and we can cut it out. And now that it's, and now she said, it's just air. We just cut it out and you can lay it out without it being, you know, laid down. But because you, when people don't know how it works, at some point you have to rehear what you did. Even if you don't watch the cartoon, you're not a fan of it, you have to go in for ADR. They play you back that character. Then you have to match that character and try to remember what you did and what was the thing as you pick up those lines. And when you're out of your groove pocket, man, you can hear it. And you're embarrassed and it's like, wow. Mm. And I have had sessions where I've gone in and just asked to do it all over. Said, I'll be so fast. Now I got it. Or they'll play it against something. And, you know, you are still vulnerable until it airs.
Yeah.
And it's subject to change and you can be replaced. And it's all, you know, it's a tough thing. But being an artist and being a voice artist is, it's... Just because we're in a microphone, it doesn't mean that we're any less creative.
That's right.
I know he didn't mean it, but I remember meeting Jeffrey Katzenberg and he said, can you hang out? I forget what it was. It might have been Aunt Bully that I was doing with Tom Hanks. And he said, can you just wait right here? We have a real actor in the booth. Can you voice actors wait here? I was like, all right. Is anybody plastic here? I thought we were all actors. Are you plastic? Because I'm a real actor. They only will let me do this. I keep auditioning for film and television. They will only let me do this so far. Mm-hmm. And I do really, Steven Spielberg told me I was good. So I'm just going to let that. I'm sure I can call Steven up and go, I'm still good, right? It's been like 1989. Oh my gosh. 99, 2009. Almost 30 years.
Almost 30
How
years.
Can I be that old?
You're not.
36.
I mean.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
How marvelous. How marvelous.
And I always like to make a push for people to be patient when they're starting out. Be patient with yourself. Be patient with your characters. Be patient with your gigs. Do not do a ton of non-union. It hurts you in the long end. It kills the rest of us. I can tell you that I have health care. I had my daughter through health care. If you work hard, the jobs will come. If in 10 years the jobs don't come, don't do non-union. Go do something else. It's not for you. It's not for everyone. Yes, it's a small field. And yes, you can make a couple of thousand and do very well, 60 or 80. But when you kill the goose that laid the golden egg, you kill it for everyone. And I'm old enough to say, you know, I'm looking forward to pulling a pension.
Yeah.
I didn't do it all in voiceover, but I did it all in acting. Yeah. I did it all in performing, all movies, teeny tiny parts where, oh my gosh, that's me in the background walking by. Ha, there I am. The only person in the party that they said, when you walk through frame, don't raise your hand, don't hail anyone. Walked right through with my hand raised.
Hey.
Like, I'm surprised I didn't have Lucy Ricardo on the bottom of my shoes. But I encourage everybody to have faith. As we were talking before we went on air, you know, platforms are changing. I don't think Netflix knows what it's going to be. We don't know how we're getting paid. The union is working on it. Celebrity high paid actors are working on it. We're all trying to figure it out. But try not to put a price on your soul. And try not to put a price on your art. It all takes time. I mean, I told you I was singing for $25 a night in nightclubs in and around West Hollywood and Santa Monica here in LA. And I couldn't afford classes because I was just barely on Thursday, Friday and Saturday nights making my rent. And I had a rabbit diesel and I was barely making enough to buy diesel groceries. And you just hang in there. Not everybody gets a break. I didn't get a break. I just kept working. And eventually people went, we're never going to be able to get rid of you. Right. And I'm like, nope.
And that's your break.
I'm going to keep coming back. And yes, we talked about,
but you
yes,
push my... that the break isn't, sometimes the break is not breaking through glass. It is pushing through the molecules of it and sneaking out, or it's merging onto the 405 at from Santa Monica where Wilshire is. And
right.
All of the cars are lined up to get off at Wilshire, and you just kind of work, and all of a sudden traffic is clear.
Right.
And it's not a break. I didn't get an accident. I've just been sitting in traffic for 10 minutes to make this, to do this
thing. And I will tell you, and how you last in showbiz is, did you flip off the person behind you, or did you wave even though they didn't let you in? Did you wave and say thank you even though you tried to squeeze me out? I eventually got in, and I will always wave and go, I'm sorry, thank you.
Yeah.
And so many times it usually is a man that will go, oh my God, like, oh, okay. And I was like, So I made your day, and that's showbiz.
That's right.
When you get in, did you turn to everybody and give them the finger and say, I'm going to do this? Or did you just thank everybody for giving you a chance? And now that I'm here, I'm going to make what I consider to be magic. You might think it's porridge. I think it's magic. And I'm going to be nice and gracious and thankful that I am in the room. And every time I get my little gigs, Kiff, I am thankful to be in the room.
Amen.
Thankful to be in the room. And we get to use our childhood that I am flipped out, that are so similar.
That is such a trip.
That is such a trip. But we're in the room. And every time we're in the room, we can thank the person behind that let us in.
That's right.
And wave and say thank you, even though they want to kill us.
That's
and
right.
It just takes all the tension away. And that's how you do 30 years in a really small sandbox, is you don't poop in it.
I can't think of a better place to transition out. Yeah, we've reached our time. Candy,
thank
how
you.
Can people find you on the social media platforms and add themselves to your numbers of your...
I love this. I am on Instagram at NotShyMilo, and I am on Twitter at CandyMilo and Candy with an I. There is a parody fake account.
Is there really?
Yeah. Could you die? And I think that the L in Milo is a capital I. Ah. So that's how you can tell. But mine has my face and then an Astro Boy banner in the back. So please come and follow me on Twitter so that when they purge the bots again, I can have real people. And I do go on, and yes, I have opinions and I'm very political, but I'm just a concerned person. That's all it is. But come follow me. My Facebook is private. My Facebook that is Candy Milo, we got locked out of, and it's been taken over by somebody else. And I, for a year, have been working with Facebook trying to prove I'm me.
That's insane.
It's insane. And so it's not me. I haven't been on. I think there are 5,000 people on there. I think a fan has taken it over, and they locked me out. So, and then mine is private just for colleagues, because I share a lot of personal stuff, but I'm really into Instagram. And I'm really into Twitter, but only nice people.
That's awesome. And do you teach? Are you teaching this stuff too?
I have not. I would like to. I would like to. I did it for a while. But I found that I was attracting, for whatever reason, bucket listers or actors that would take my course for 4 or 5 weeks where I talked about character creation and then hustle me for an agent endlessly so that we couldn't even be friends anymore, where I would say, I can't get you an agent and I can't bring you to, and even if I do, they're not, I'm with a very small agency. I'm with Sandy Schnardi and Peter Verano at AVO, and we all work to keep the lights on.
Yeah.
And I am not that kind of person where I can walk in with a lot of juice and go,
right,
hey, I just taught this guy, he's great.
Yeah.
They take mid-range to heavy hitters, and then the agent's assistants, Kiff, take on their own personal people that they're building up.
Gotcha.
We're not, I know of better agencies, but I can't get anybody an agent.
Yep.
And if you're a dentist, I'm not the person you want to take from, because I can't teach you how to act.
Yeah.
I can only teach you how to do cartoon voices.
Yes.
And how I do them.
Awesome.
So I don't. Maybe I'll teach. Maybe we should teach something.
I would love that. We'll find some way to make that happen.
Let's
that would be
something.
Absolutely delightful.
Wouldn't that be fun? And then
we would
just laugh the whole time and
talk
about our childhood.
And talk about our childhoods. And then our students would be like, Can I please have my money back?
And we'd be like, spend it.
Spend it. Spend it's already it. Spent on Venmo. I just booked a safari. Thanks, guys.
Venmo is my favorite.
Oh, I love
all right,
it too.
Do we have to go?
We have to go. I have
all
to right. play the music out. Thank Bye. You so much
love
for listening, you.
You
guys. And I'm on at KiffVH for more information on both Twitter and Instagram and on Vero. Come find me on Vero. I love
oh,
Vero.
We gotta
I'm
talk.
A huge, I'll talk more okay. about that. And we'll be back with more episodes very soon. Peace.
Woo.
This has been All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH. For questions to be either answered on Twitter or on an upcoming cast, tweet to the show at All Over VO Kiff. Till next week, you get what you get and don't get upset. Claim victory and depart the field.